Hello, and welcome to AgTech So What, brought to you by the AgVentic Group. I'm Sarah Nolette. Autonomous equipment has come a long way in a relatively short period of time, and the benefits it promises, especially in high labor sectors like specialty crops, are pretty huge. But between the almost completely manual present and a nearly or fully autonomous future, there is a very messy middle. And that could complicate the picture for companies looking to win in this space.
We're already living in the mixed fleet world. All our data is coming from a mixed fleet. The mixed fleet will be, some of them will be autonomous and some of them not. And some of them will be of this company and some of them will be with autonomous of this company. So autonomy is a mean to an end. I know it will be commodity. The winner will not be autonomous solution.
That's Iftok Berger, co-founder and COO at Fieldin, a farm data and autonomous equipment startup based in Israel. Iftok's experience with Fieldin offers some valuable insight, not only on how the autonomous sector might shape up, but also on SaaS models in agriculture. He also shares some excellent stories on building a company outside your biggest market and how to meet your first international customers. But first, we'll learn a bit more about Fieldin and about Iftok's journey. He was born and raised on one of the largest specialty crop farms in Israel, where he did everything from the most basic tasks to managing the whole operation and even launching an olive oil business alongside the farm. From there, he got a master's in plant science, and while doing his coursework, met his now co-founder, who had deeper experience in tech and entrepreneurship, though much less direct experience in ag. In a case of what Iftok describes as perfect timing, they decided to just start, and they had a vision for a transformative company from the get-go.
So our basically mission didn't change since we started the company. From day one, our mission was to provide high-value crops growers with data to better manage their day-to-day operation, to become more efficient and accurate in every activity they are doing in the farm. So it's the same mission. We are focusing on this specific growers, the high-value crops growers. Just to be clear, when I'm talking about high-value crop grower, I'm talking about crops that are more than $2,000 per acre on the production cost. So it's more about the trees. It's about high-value crops. It's the food that we are eating. What we are buying in the supermarket is the vegetables and it's the tree fruits, apples, almonds, or nuts. This part of the farming is a part that always suffer from less technologies because the big companies focus like the John Deere of the world, the Case New Holland, the pesticide companies, they're focused on the broad acre, on the big acreage crop like the corn and the soy, etc. And the high value crop that is more specific always add less technology, although they are very sophisticated growers because they are growing stuff that is very hard to grow. The cost of mistake can be very high in high value crops, but again, it's about focus. So there is the big companies never focus on that. So we felt that this is the place that will embarrass our technology in the best way.
They also have higher willingness to pay, right? Because of the value of the crops, yeah. You can charge more for the services. I imagine that had a role as well.
Exactly. And there is a loss. And another big thing about high value crops, they are not a commodity. So the meaning that the earnings, like their margins are basically based on their performance. Because commodity, you know, it's not always about you. You can have something that happened in some other place in the world and then the price of drop. With the high value crops, the good growers, they are, their wins are bigger.
Tell me a little bit more about the journey of getting to where you are today. Any failures, any pivots, any mistakes along the way that you're able to share?
Yeah, mistakes. Mistakes are happening on every day in startup, just to be fully transparent. But the journey, yeah, it started. So we started in Israel, and Israel is a small growers compared to the world, to the growers that now we are working in. The meaning is that the average size of a grower is probably will be around the 100 acres. And these growers have a different mentality than the big growers. Currently, our minimum, we work with commercial growers because our product is focusing on helping big operations. But when we started, we focused on the smallest. We still have a lot of clients in Israel. So there are still clients of Fieldin, there are still small growers. But if I think about, it's not a mistake, but something that we can do faster, is to come faster to the US or to your main market, because we were staying in Israel 4 years before we put our first, we found the first client in the US. And when you are finding the first client, then the acceleration of your company is really starting, because until then you are building a product. By the way, it's not that the product was 180 degree different, but it's not the same product. So if I can give like a tip for a young entrepreneur, they need to accelerate their time to get to the real market that they are looking for, because this is the only way to check your product market fit and really investing in the right thing. But if I come back to the journey, we done that 4 years in Israel, developed the product. We very fast came into capture basically all the market. Like I think after 2 years, like we was like, we work with all the relevant growers in Israel, all of the relevant acres. And then in 2017, we started our journey in the US with one of the biggest almond growers in the world.
When you decided to come to California, did you just show up? Did you call growers? Did you get pulled in by customers? Like, how did you actually get to California and getting that first client? Was it a relationship you had, or to tell us the story of that first client?
So we probably had a very good product market fit, because we've been in a conference in San Francisco, and basically this grower came to us directly and tell us that he need our solution because he heard about us, and we just started. And just to be clear, this is the biggest grower in the world, the grower that came to us. So it was, to be honest, more luck than we was
right place, right time.
Yeah, we was planned to work in the States, but again, I think that they come to us, they heard about us, and they said that they heard about our solution and they needed it. It was like a spraying solution, like to help them to better manage their spray operations. That is a very expensive and complex thing to manage when you are a big grower. So this was our first step. It helped us a lot to work with this grower because we tested with him. And then we started to get more and more clients over here in California, in the Central Valley. And once we are working with them, also our value proposition was grow with them, because one of the biggest things that you can do in a company is listen to your clients. Because, and I would say something, I done basically everything in Elmonds when I was young, like I know how to do it. Yet your clients know always better than you what they need. Now you need to listen exactly. It's not that everything that they are saying is exactly how you need to make your product, but if you listen carefully and you understand their pain points, that this is the main thing, then you can evolve the product. So when we started, we provided like a spraying solution, like a platform to help you better manage your spraying operation, like closing the pest management cycle from scouting, from looking for the pest or for the disease, make the recommendation, and then actual spraying, measure it and close the loop. And we evolve with that into a smart farm. So basically in the last 3 years, we provide a full smart farm solution that basically cover all the operation in the farm. So we are measuring every mechanical activity that happened in the farm, from checking irrigation leak with your ATVs up to measure how many seconds you're shaking every tree, and of course spraying and mowing and every other activity. So basically we provide a one-stop solution to manage all your operation in the farm. That also lead us to the autonomy solutions. That this is like the next generation of what we are working on.
Do you have an example of that challenge of listening to your customers, like when they say they want one thing, but when you actually watch how they operate or see how it works in the field, you realize that what they're saying isn't exactly what they want? It needs to manifest in a slightly different way.
I think about something that I hear a lot from growers that I agree in high level on that. And growers, they always say that they want one stop shop, one solution, that everything will be on that. Now, they are right in the concept of that. But this is not what they need. It's not about the one stop. They just need seamlessly operating systems that basically will help them to utilize basically every technology that they can implement in the farm in a way that will make 1 + 1 = 3. The meaning that two systems needs to, if they can bring the data to the one place that they can take the decision.
Do you think that it's not what they want or not what they need, or is it just hard to build?
In the current ecosystem, it's hard to build.
Yeah.
I don't see, I think that in the long run, this is what will happen. By the way, this is why what we are aiming to do. And again, it's not about the one-stop shop. It's about the ability to utilize technology like your phone, right? You don't care what's happening like on every app, what was the backend, et cetera. But once you have app, you have operating systems that running everything on that, it's make every your life easier, right? It's easy access. So in the end, it's very complex to be a grower, right? Because let's face it, it's not depend, a lot of stuff not depend on you. And it's pretty crazy to a business. There is a climate change and there is a weather event that they cannot control on you. There is no labor. They have a labor shortage. They don't have employee to run their machine. They don't have water or not always. They don't say they have water. It's very expensive. The pesticides are, et cetera. It's so expensive. In this world, I believe that they need access to the best in class technologies and the ability to really work with these technologies.
One of the challenges, right, is it's easy to strive for the iPhone experience, and yet the total addressable market for the iPhone is much larger than the total addressable market for an integrated data sharing solution in agriculture, because you've got, like you said, differences in each market, differences in the size of the growers, differences in different crops and the needs, and then seasonally. So the challenge that you guys face, I would imagine, is how do we balance the desire for this streamlined all-in-one experience with the fact that there are many different sub-markets and winning in them all is actually quite expensive. So if you're getting into nuanced conversations about the difference between like a one-stop shop or we need this magical dashboard where everything is integrated versus the what we're actually talking about here is interoperability, or what we're actually talking about is how the data is flowing. Do you get into the differences in how you might achieve one-stop shop, or do growers not really care?
Yeah, so the way that we look at it, there is, instead of one-stop shop, there is two-way stops. What is the meaning? There is agronomic platform and there is operational platform. Agronomic platform, it's companies in our market like Simios, if you have heard about them, or Phytech, that they are like try to bring a lot of agronomic data into one place and help them to take decision. And there is the operational. The agronomy is the why we are irrigating, why we are need to spray, because there is a lot of data that they need to summarize and give it to the grower, take the decision, or taking the decision for him. And the how is what we are doing. This is the operational side. For example, the why can say you have a pest, right? Or you need to harvest now. The how is, okay, now that I have this data, how I'm doing it in the most efficient and accurate way. So from the get-go, we are looking at only two separate platforms. That also the personas in the farm are not the same persona. The persona for the agronomist is the chief agronomist, is this person. And the operation is the VP operation. Actually, it's also the CEO most of the time, the company, because the majority of what farming is doing is operational, right? There is a decision and then a lot of machines and people that need to do something based on the decision that was taking on the agronomy. So on this side of the operation, yes, this is where we are seeing ourselves as a one-stop shop. So we are working, for example, with other companies also, and we connect sensor of other companies that connect to our solution. For example, rate controllers for sprayers. We are not developing every hardware in the world. We just want to provide to the growers the ability to utilize the best in class technology to be more accurate and efficient in his day-to-day operations. We are also connecting, for example, if we look to the autonomous part, we are not seeing ourselves as the only autonomous solution provider in the world. The opposite. We are seeing ourselves as a company that will provide the recommendation and the what to do to the autonomous machines that we drive in the farm based on our operating system, because we have the data that capture of, okay, this is what needs to be done. We need to spray this block with this gallon per acre in this speed, et cetera, et cetera. Now it's only a task that we'll send to an autonomous vehicle, or it could be also our autonomous vehicle, because we are also building retrofit kits let's say sitting on tractors, but it's part of the operational ecosystem, if it makes sense.
It makes sense to me that you guys would start in tracking and recording on the operational side, because then you can understand where there's low-hanging fruit for autonomy, like where you can actually automate. Is that how you thought about it? Like, let's monitor and capture the data, and then let's see where we can actually introduce autonomy to take out labor or save cost. Was that the plan?
Yeah, again, when we started the 2013, autonomy was something that you see in science fiction. But when we started, our first thing was to provide the transparency, visibility, and metrics. Because I will say another thing. If farming, you will see that there is a lot of data on farming. You will go to UC Davis, or you will go to other universities around the world. The data is agronomic data, how to grow your crop. There is not a lot of data of how to operate your farm. And it's crazy, right? You look at a multi-million dollar companies or a multi-billion dollar companies, and basically they don't have a clue what is a good shaking time, for example, for shakers. Now I'm talking about millions of dollars or tens of millions of dollars they are spending only on this activity. And they don't know if they need to shake it 4 seconds and then go to the next tree in 8 seconds. They just don't know. They're doing that like 30, 40, 50 years the same way. And they don't know what is the industry benchmark for that. What is the best practice? So our goal was from the data is first of all to create metrics, to create data, to create a language that everybody in the farm and the ecosystem will talk on the same metrics. And this is what we've done. I think this is our biggest thing that Fieldin has done to the industry. And this is why we became so successful, because we basically took something very complex and we made it very easy, because we make it to talk on very specific metrics that every grower understands, but now they can check themselves and improve themselves and understand how they are comparing to the industry, to what they need to do. So that was our first initial thing. This was help us to help to the growers to increase their coverage in a shift in more than 25% each shift. So basically they reduced their operational cost by 25%, but it wasn't enough, because the labor shortage worldwide and the cost of manpower of employees is something that is on the rise. In California, only in the last 5 years, the cost was up by 75%. And also the labor that there is, it's like, it's not on the same professional level like it used to be. So for example, you are putting somebody very new on a sprayer, on a shaker, it will break the machine. It cannot do it. So we understood that labor is one of is the biggest challenges that farmers have worldwide and for the growth. And when we look in there, we said, okay, autonomy is a key to solve this problem. And we as an operator, as a company that already work with the biggest growers on the world, already have the data, already understand the needs, we have a big leverage of implementing these technologies in the field. So this is why we acquired Midnight Robotics.
How did you think about that acquisition? Did you search the landscape and then you picked them? Why? Yeah, tell us about why and how the acquisition went.
Yeah, so first of all, we look on the retrofit kit markets. The reason is because Fieldin is already have tens of thousands of sensors worldwide. We want to see how we can take the already existing ecosystem that we have and convert them into autonomy. So the retrofit was fit for us. There is autonomous companies that are built from scratch, gas sprayers or Monarchs. So this is not what we are looking. Of course, in the future, we will be part of the ecosystem, but this is one thing. We look on the retrofit, and on the retrofit specifically, when we look on what's happened, we saw that the Midnight guys are the most progressed company in terms of algorithms and understanding of autonomy. It's a group of people that come from a spin-off of Innoviz. This is a leading LiDAR company that IPO'd 2 years ago. In the Nasdaq, we saw the technology, we tested the technology, and then when we see there is, and it's something that is progress enough, then we done the acquisition.
The retrofit space makes me think about an analog in another industry. If you think of GPS units for cars, we used to go rent a car and then we would need to buy a separate GPS unit because the car didn't have a GPS in it. And so it was really helpful to have Garmin or whoever it was. Now the cars just come with the GPS embedded. And so we don't need to buy that extra piece. When do you think you'll run up against the incumbents installing their own autonomy and therefore maybe creates a problem for the Garmins of this world?
So the way that we are looking on that, the real revolution will come when everything will be autonomous on the farm. And I will explain why. You have employees that works on a tractor in the season, but then on the end of the season, on the harvesting, he will work on the shaker. The same person, because he work on one type of machine and then he moves to the other part of it, because this is the cycle of labor in farming. We are going to live, I think, in the next 15 years, 1.5 of a mixed fleet world. And again, it's different than the car. The one car is a world. In farming, the one tractor is nothing. The swarm, the fleet is what is important because everything connected. So we are going to live in a world of a mixed fleet. The mixed fleet will be, some of them will be autonomous and some of them not. And some of them will be of this company and some of them will be with autonomous of this company. Like now we are going to farm, you will see tractors of John Deere, of Case, of New Holland, and you see sprayers of Aerofan and gas and other companies and mowers and harvesting machines. So it's going to be a transition mode. And we, again, as a company, we are seeing ourselves as the operating system of this revolution, not as the autonomy. The autonomy, yes, it's going to be. And this mixed world, we as a company, we already solved the biggest problem of digitize everything. So we are already digitized. We already living in the mixed fleet world. All our data is coming from a mixed fleet. So you are right. Autonomy is a mean to an end. I know it will be commodity. The big company, the winner, will not be autonomous solution. Because like you said, the Garmin is a tool. It's a tool for something much bigger. Go faster from one point to the next point.
Yeah, the operational complexity makes sense to me. And to your point about the humans, like you haven't solved the whole problem if you've only automated one task because the farmer still has to pay for that employee to do the other task. So I guess that leads to another possible business model, which is to be a contract operator and to actually work to provide the entire service. Did you ever consider that or other different business models?
Yeah, we consider it, but we are coming to serve the world, not one company. So our business model is SaaS. So run a SaaS model company in the agriculture world that is very unique thing. There is not a lot of companies that are eating the SaaS metric of a growth company to start be the person that hundreds of employees are driving on a sprayer to spray. This is sounds great on paper, but it's very hard to grow your, to be like a worldwide company being the operating system of the world. So
it's interesting you say that because I actually perceive the operating system play as also challenging or also challenging to scale for what we were saying before about like what works in specialty crops in California is very different than what works in specialty crops in other markets, but also in broadacre. And so how do you actually get to the size of market and the lower cost of customer acquisition that can make a software model work in agriculture?
Yeah, so this is the thing. What we already built is basically something that we work with the majority of the crops of high value crops because the basic of tractor and what tractor is doing is not so different between apple growers in Washington state to a almond grower in California and to a vineyard grower in Australia. Now, it's different on the business side. There is countries that the growers are more commercial, like Australia and the US. And there is countries that the high value crops are less commercial in the way they work. Like in Europe, there are a lot of smaller growers. So this is the main difference, but like in terms of how you are, how they are running their operation, the basics are the same. There is agronomics, they say, take a decision, and then there is tractors that going and doing that in a certain area.
Am I right to understand then that you guys plan to stay in high value crops or specialty? That's, you're not getting like pressure from investors to move into bigger markets?
the high value crops is big enough that we will not need this pressure. We already have a lot of incomes in the company. Again, we are continue growing year over year with metrics of Silicon Valley company, not traditional ag, sensor, whatever, that they have a very slow growth pace. Now, I will say that we start to work a bit on the Midwest, but yeah, it's not our main focus. It just was a low-hanging fruit for us to try something. But we are looking in the high-value crop ecosystem as the next big thing in farming. And I think that in the next few years, you will see a lot of investment in high-value crops because autonomy, there is a TAM, total addressable market behind it, and it's fitting to high-value crops much, much more than to broad acre, because replacing operator on $1 million tractor that cover 1,000 acres a day on the broad acre, the value is not like to replace an operator on a swarm of 10 tractors that cover 200 acres a day, and then you're replacing 10 employees and not one, that your margin are different. So I'm pretty sure that in the next few years, there will be a huge boom on the investment on the high value crops. You already start to see it on the robotics.
Yeah, it's interesting. My sense is that you mentioned Semios before with the acquisition of AgWorld. It would seem that they're thinking about and need to expand into broadacre. It would also seem that for them, money is not really the issue with the kind of backing they have. So if they're the kind of parallel in the agronomic space to your operational space, it seems like they're seeing the opportunity to expand into broadacre, but you don't feel like that's going to be necessary for you guys?
Yeah, again, I'm not saying no, definitely. And like I said, we already started to do it, but as a focus of a company, we try to be the high value crops leaders in terms of be the operating system of the high value crops grower. What will happen in the future, like if there will be amazing opportunities to expand it, yes, but we are trying to serve clients in a very focused way, and you cannot do everything.
The focus point makes a lot of sense to me. And I love what you said about the meeting your first US customer at a conference. We see that all the time with startups who come to speak with us on the investment side. It's like, well, I went to these three conferences and I left with 15 customers. Look how much demand there is. That's very different than getting to 100 or 300 or 1,000 customers, because those second and third tiers of farmers aren't coming to those conferences with their hand in their pocket ready to pay. So you have to cross this, I guess, what we would call the messy middle there, and you're solving a different adoption problem. Any comments on how you guys have navigated that from like early adopters into more market penetration?
Brand. You just need a good brand. This is how I've seen it. Farming is a big industry, but a small community. So you just need to have to do what you're saying. Sell, execute. By the way, not you don't need always to do exact, because there is challenges when everything is not perfect. Anyone that will say that they come, install the technology and it's work, it's not happening. But if you are execute, if you are boots on the ground, if you are repeatable about what you are saying and you are acting as a pro and you are working with the growers to solving problems and you are there when he need you, it happens. To be honest, like you don't need any like a secret thing. So the way that we've done it, by the way, we establish office in Fresno in the Central Valley. This is where our company was focused. We have employees based all around the Central Valley in every place that we are working in. We have boots on the ground there when they need us. And by the way, you said something very interesting about early adopters. They are amazing clients for the start, but the main thing is the second one, because the second one, first of all, will be much more loyal, because early adopter try everything. You don't really need amazing product to get to the early adopter. It's giving you a first sign that you have something in your hand, but the real thing is the second wave that, by the way, will stay for you if you are not going to do a lot of mistakes for you for forever, because they already saw you, they already understand who are you, they already give you their confidence in you, and they will stick.
I like what you said about brand, that credibility in the industry really matters. It also sounds like the tactics you're using, having boots on the ground and being near customers, is pretty expensive. Is there a trade-off there?
You know, doing business is expensive thing, but it's about how you're building your business model. We don't think that the technology, it's only the IP of the technology. We are seeing technology as something much more all. Like a big, like you have customer success, growth success, this is a major part of our product. This is how we are seeing that. This is like a tool for the growers to be successful. Yeah, it's like our tech team, it's part of our solution. So we are looking at maybe differently than other tech companies, but we are seeing software as a service. The service is part of that. It's not only the software, and the services bring everything.
Do you see that as a differentiator if you're speaking with a customer that and they're evaluating multiple products? Because I imagine, again, once you move from early adopters into more of the mainstream customers, they and the market is advancing, there's more competitors for you. The growers are comparing you to other solutions and they have to decide if they pick you or if they pick someone else. Is service why they pick you, or are there other reasons?
Yeah, I think it's not only that. We have a good brand. We don't have a lot of competition, to be perfectly honest. There is, but they are not at the rate. They don't have our value proposition. And yes, I think that that our grower is speaking in their language. It's always going to be, by the way, a local person that from this area. And by the way, there is another thing that happened in farming. There is so many white elephants, like companies that came and go, and growers still have scars from that. And when they are seeing that you are local, that you are persistent, that you are there, you are executing what you are saying, to provide confidence. And one of our growers just tell us like a few weeks ago, he was part of us. We was like hosting some kind of autonomous group that talk about the future of autonomous. So we said in front of everyone that he prefer companies with maybe a less innovative solution, but with a bit, with boots on the ground that will help him to work when their things are becoming out there, than companies that have promises that they will take you to the moon and will increase your yield by XYZ. But in the end, this is farming. There was always middle of the night, something will happen and they need people to work with on that. Again, I don't think it's just as our competitive advantage. I think that this is the only way to succeed in farming, to be perfectly honest.
Are you seeing the skill sets that these farms need change as they have more technologies like yours, more autonomy? Do they need different skills?
Yeah, definitely. I see also the people that are recruiting. I believe that in the next few years, all the farm will be much different. There will be less people in the farm, highly educated people that will run a farm as a technology, with multiple technologies. I already seeing that the young generation is, it's other people. They are much more like tech savvy. They are much more reliant on technology. My father is still running the farm. He's still working with gut feeling now. It's amazing when you have 70 years of experience. Our generation don't have 70 years and will not have 70 years of experience. So they work with technology.
Throughout our conversation, a few nuggets from IFTalk really stuck out, especially for those interested in how technology might help bridge today's ag labor shortfall. For entrepreneurs, IFTalk pointed out that though it's critical to listen to your customers when building your product, it's just as important to understand the difference between what they say they want and what their problems actually are. Being able to find the best solution for your customers' actual pain points and being able to explain why your solution might not look exactly like what they told you to build is key. For those especially interested in the autonomous equipment space, IFTalk's prediction that the companies that build the tools might not be as dominant in the long term as those that enable the tools is insightful. For a company making autonomous equipment or retrofit tools, it's not difficult to imagine even a near-term future where they get their lunch eaten by the existing equipment companies as they bring autonomous or retrofit tech in-house. Fieldin's strategy to avoid this fate is to own the platform that allows a mixed fleet of equipment to interact seamlessly. It's a difficult strategy for sure, so we'll be watching. Finally, for the strategists out there, IFTalk's points about delivering services alongside software in the ag space were interesting. Farmer customers certainly appreciate boots-on-the-ground partners who can show up to help troubleshoot 24/7, 365. But balancing that desire with a sustainable business model is a huge challenge, even for companies based in the same country as their key markets. IFTalk says he doesn't see strong service delivery as a competitive advantage as much as the cost of doing business. But with labor markets as tight as they are, I'm left wondering when the cost of an on-the-ground service does become untenable. So that's it for another episode of AgTech So What. A huge thanks to our guest, IFTalk Berger of Fieldin. And of course, thank you for listening. For more information on any of the resources mentioned in this episode, please visit our website at agtechsowhat.com. I'm Sarah Nillette. Catch you next time.